It is time to talk birds on the Tuesday morning show. We've been asking if you have a story to tell us. You can text us 218-326-1234. We heard from Michael and Karen. They had their first visit yesterday, Pam, from the a Nashville warbler. Pam Perry joins us now to talk birds, a non-game wildlife biologist. Morning, Pam. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Heidi and John. And yes, I heard that report, and I had a Nashville and a chestnut sighted at my bird bath yesterday, late afternoon.
Oh, nice.
And what that means is they're starting to move around. They're moving off the nesting territories. And we will see more because late August and into September, warblers keep moving, as do a lot of other birds.
Yeah, indeed. I've been kind of keeping track of my rose-breasted grosbeaks because it's not long and they will be sliding out of the area. They and the male hummingbirds will also sort of start to disappear. So I'll be watching for both of those. Those are, for me, easy signs because, one, the grosbeaks come to the feeder and, well, so do the hummingbirds, and it's kind of easy to keep track, slug out there and see.
Yeah. Yes, it is. And you also mentioned earlier, John, that your blackbirds were basically gone. And mine are too. I have them all summer because I have a big marsh to the north of my house. And that for me is when the blackbirds are gone, the redwings are gone from the feeder. They've moved off the marsh for the most part.
Okay.
I have seen and heard a few out on lakes, but not at my feeders anymore. And so they're joining up in big flocks and moving around and feeding. They don't need to stay on the nesting areas. Again, they're moving off. These are all signs of fall.
Yeah. Well, speaking of fall, and I noticed in a note that we passed between us, you had mentioned loons and hawks. Loons, let's start with the loons. What's going on with loons? What can we expect to see with loons this time of year?
Oh, you know, it's so interesting. You know, and Heidi mentioned earlier she was out on a pontoon. Yes, many of us are out. This is a great time of the year to be out on the water. And I've been out the last couple of weeks. And you're going to see a couple different things. The loons that have chicks are still there. They're still on the lake, taking care of their chick. And you might have one loon, the other one might move off somewhere, or feed, go somewhere else, but they're staying with the chick. They will leave, the adults will leave in September, and they just take off. And I had one person on our pontoon yesterday said, well, that's not very good parenting if they leave. And I said, well, no, but the chicks can take care of themselves, and they don't leave until they have to, which often means when there's ice forming on the lake.
Yes, right.
You know, and so it's so interesting because the adults leave, and they leave and they go separate. They don't stay together. This is not like a pair that, or a family that stays together at all. The adults leave, the male and female go separately. And the chicks stay until they're later, and then they migrate separately. They know where to go, how to do it. This is all part of how loons work. And it's so, so interesting that they do that. And then there's the loons that either were unmated or unsuccessful at raising a chick. And they're gathering in groups already. And that's what I call a party. And it's usually on the larger lakes, and they just gather in bigger and big groups.
Yeah.
And we saw a group of six last week. We weren't on a really big lake, but on the bigger lakes, you can have groups of 10 or 20 or more out in the lake, and they're just gathering because they don't need to stay on those nesting lakes either. So the loon behavior is super interesting.
It really is.
And the fact that the chicks migrate all on their own, that they know where to go. They're going to go, from what we know with radio tracking, most of them will go to the Great Lakes, as the adults do as well. And then they just kind of work their way south and they get down to the south end of Lake Michigan. Then they start going further into further lakes or reservoirs or places further south and then down to the Gulf.
I was part of a study where they put transmitters in juvenile loons. And the one loon that we worked with had a rather unusual migratory pattern going south. It was following the Mississippi River just sort of as a general idea. It spent some time in Illinois, and then it was in Missouri, and then it was in Kentucky, and then it was back in Arkansas, and then it was over into Mississippi, and finally it made the Gulf. But it was it wasn't a let's follow the river. It was kind of like, I feel the need to go south, but in a general way.
And they're exploring.
Yeah, yeah.
They're exploring, is like what young critters do anyways.
Yeah.
And birds explore over great distances because they can, and they go that way. And then the juveniles will stay down in the Gulf for a couple of years, and then they'll explore going north. And I know some of them that have been tracked go up the East Coast for a while.
Yeah.
And some of them go up into Canada. And then some head back this way eventually.
The young ones
will eventually come back here somewhere.
Yeah. The one that we had tracked went from the Gulf in its first year. It went up to the Lake Champlain in New York and Vermont, and then into Lake Erie and then Lake Ontario, and it spent the summer in this Gulf of St. Lawrence and then came back down. And the second year it went back to Lake Erie and then went west and settled on a lake that was north of Minnesota but east of Winnipeg. And the batteries in the transmitter died at that point, so they had no more data on that particular one. But a lot of this is kind of brand new because, you know, a lot of what they knew about loons was sort of observational. It wasn't like they didn't have this kind of tracking data that they do now. So,
oh, absolutely. This is fairly new data within the last 15 years or so.
Yep.
And I know I was out with a crew when we were putting in a radio transmitter one night when the work was first really starting in Minnesota, and that was the U.S. Geological Society.
Yeah. Was that a guy named Kino out of Winona or La Crosse?
Hmm?
A guy
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. They started there, and now then the work has continued on. And I know that the Loon Center and Dr. Walter Piper are still doing loon work and continuing on with that because they're going, oh, there's more to learn. We're learning a lot.
Indeed,
and
there
so,
is.
So, you know, when you see those loons, when you're out on the water and you see those loons, look and see, okay, is this, we've still got a chick and a pair or one taking care of it. And then, or do we have these groups?
Yeah.
And I used to get calls at the DNR all the time. And, one of the calls was, what are they doing? There's a group of loons out there. And they go, I've never seen that before. Yep. It happens. Get out on the lakes and you'll see it. And then the other calls I used to get was, the adults left. The chick is abandoned. No, they're fine. They're fine. They will do fine. They just leave earlier because they're done. They've done their work. They raised a chick and now the chick is on its own.
We're talking with Pam Perry today, talking birds on KAXC. Quick question. So you called the grouping of the loons. Are you just calling them a party or is it an actual party? Is that the name?
Oh, that's just what I call
it. Okay, all right, good. and then we heard, I like it. We heard from Julie from Cook who says bluebirds have just fledged the nest yesterday.
Yes. And I have a friend with a couple of bluebird nests. She had one that fledged a day or so ago and one that was going to fledge in another day. So the bluebirds are at the, on their last nesting for the season and they're still fledging and nesting.
Would that be a second brood for bluebirds?
Oh, yes.
Because they come so early. It surprises me.
They come really early, and yes, that would be the second brood.
Okay, good.
Yeah, and so, You know, some birds nest can do that, and they can do more than one brood, and some can't. It depends on how long the nesting, fledging period is, whether they can regroup again. Robins certainly can do this, so they have more than one nesting. Yeah. And that's one of the things that makes them so successful, because they can raise more than one brood in a year.
I had one robin in my garage that raised four broods in the same nest all summer long. Just she was the mother of the year, I think, because she must have had 16 or more babies that she pushed out of that garage.
Oh my goodness.
How about hawks? Do hawks ever double brood?
No.
Okay.
Takes too long to raise the young ones.
There's too much to teach them.
Yes, and they have to do a lot of teaching afterwards.
Yeah,
and
you have to catch this. You have to catch this. This isn't like going to a, you can't go to a feeder.
It's moving.
Yeah, go get those rabbits.
So that's what I wanted to talk about this morning, was that there are young hawks out there now. Some of them still have a parent with them, and some of them don't. Or maybe it's not all the time. Yesterday, I was up in Cross Lake, and we heard this broadwing hawk calling and calling and calling. And we were going, what is that? We went over there. Well, there were two, and I thought it was a young one calling because it was so noisy. You know how young eagles call a lot?
Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah.
When they get big, they want to be fed.
Yep.
And so there were two, and one was a young one, I'm quite sure. The other one was an adult. And the adult was going, oh, my goodness, what are we going to do? We have to find some food for you. You have to learn to hunt. And it was just calling, calling, calling. So you're going to see broad-winged hawks out there. And you will likely see young ones. And you can tell they're young. The plumage is a little different. And they act kind of stupid. they don't know exactly what they're doing. But the broadwing is our most common woodland hawk.
Can you very quickly just give a quick, I'm out in the woods and I see this hawk. How do I know it's a broadwing? I know, but I want you to tell folks how you know.
Right. And I know hawk ID is challenging for a lot of people. And they say, well, I saw a hawk, but I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
The broadwing has very broad bands on the tail, and it's a fairly short tail in comparison with the body and the wings. They're brown, they're smaller hawks, but those broad bands on the tail are distinctive. Now, the young ones, I think, have narrower bands, so that's, not as good. But they're just brown and streaky. The adults have streaks that go horizontal across the chest. The juveniles, it's up and down, vertical. So now, in comparison, the other woodland hawk that we'll see often is the Cooper's hawk. And the Cooper's hawk has a very long tail, long with bands, has a very different profile. The broadwing will soar out in the open. The Cooper's is going through the woods. The Cooper's really like to come into your bird feeders because they're a bird hawk. The broadwing eats mammals. So it likes to hunt more in the open or on the edges of the woodland and will go for mice and things like that. So what was interesting about the Cooper's hawk, what made me think about these immatures, I saw an immature in my backyard, and then it was kind of towards my feeders. Then it flew back one day. And now yesterday, it was back again, standing in my bird bath.
Just cooling my
feet. And it was so big. The tail hangs out over the side. This was a big bird, immature. It was all brown. The adults for the Coopers are gray with kind of a reddish, rusty color on the chest. The juveniles are all brown. Size of a crow or a little better with a longer tail. But standing in my bird bath. So it did that 2 days in a row. And then it just flew up into a sumac in my backyard and sat there. And of course, all the birds were scolding it. But this bird didn't really know what it was doing. You know, that's the whole thing. It wasn't a really effective hunter yet. But obviously it was getting there. And then it flew off and went back into the woods after a little bit.
Now, I would say, just from my own personal experience, broad-winged hawks, the banding on the tail tends to be white and black. And the Cooper's tends to be more pale gray, dark gray, not exactly white and black.
I would say, there's grayish. Yeah. Yes, there is gray on there.
And you described the Cooper's as being crow-sized. The broadwing isn't quite as big as a pigeon, but in that, I mean, the wingspan might be, but the bird itself, when you see it sitting, it isn't as plump as a pigeon. It's
right.
But smaller, right. Smaller definitely than the Cooper's.
Yeah, I think so. And you'll often see broadwings even on power lines. You know, they're small enough to perch on power lines. Again, out in the open a little more, but they are a woodland hawk. They do, but they like those edges and hunt
the other thing
that way. So just another interesting thing that's going on right now. Watch for the hawks. I had someone send me a picture and the picture was from somewhere else. And but a friend he was meeting for breakfast or something. I said, what hawk is this? Took one look at it and said, oh, broadwing. And he had three young ones around his backyard just hanging around. And, you know, they just fledged. They don't know what they're doing, but they're trying to figure out life.
Yeah, amazing. They're so much fun. Uh-huh.
We just heard from Betsy Crabb, who is on a trip in San Diego. She said she was surprised to see loons in the salt water there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Loons, that's one of the, going back to loons, that's one of the interesting things that loons do is that they can switch from fresh water to salt water. And a lot of birds can't do that.
Yeah.
They're very adapted, and they're going to go down on the West Coast. Yes, you're going to see loons there, and then you're going to see them in the Southeast off the coast of Florida and Texas as well.
I had read that when the loons are on the ocean, that you can sometimes see they separate the salt from the water and they weep it out of their tear ducts. And so they'll have these white, salty streaks on their faces.
Yeah, they have to deal with the salt.
Oh,
and they have to get rid of it.
That reminds me about loons. When do they molt, and do they have an eclipse molt, or are they flight worthy all the time?
They're flight worthy, pretty much.
Okay.
So it's a little different from waterfowl.
Yep.
Where waterfowl undergo this drastic molt where they can't fly. They're flightless for a while. But they're going to start changing color, the adults, in the fall.
Okay.
Now.
So we'll
after
see
they
some
move
of
off the lakes. Yeah, they're going to, and then they'll look more like the juveniles.
Right. Yeah. Very good. Yeah. Pam. Unbelievably, we've exhausted our time. I'm glad to see you back on your feet. I hope that your surgery was successful. It looks like it was.
I hope so, too. We all go through these things.
As a person who's had shoulder surgery, I can encourage you to follow the rehab, the physical therapy part.
Yeah, I start PT on Monday. Everyone's told me that's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it will
be. The arm working again, but I am getting out, thank goodness. So.
All right. Nice to see you again. Look forward to talking to you again next month. As always, it's a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yes, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Bye.